From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Coming up later this hour on our new Meet the Mayor series, we'll talk to Sparta's mayor and look forward to that. And with Juneteenth coming up this weekend, we'll talk to organizers of the La Crosse Juneteenth celebration and tell you how you can support the work and also enjoy the festivities at the same time. But first, about a third of Wisconsinites, women and men, experience some kind of intimate partner violence or stalking at some point in their lives. And there are alarming statistics to note among LGBTQ people as well. Over 60% of bisexual women, 37% of bisexual men, and half of transgender or non-binary people will experience sexual assault, domestic violence, or stalking at some point in their life. And joining us to talk about the effort to protect people from domestic violence is Ann Kapoff, Executive Director of New Horizons Shelter and Outreach Centers. Ann, welcome to Newsmakers.
Thank you, Ezra.
So I read that a very alarming statistic of really a third of people. It's a little bit more than a third of women and a little bit less than a third of men experience domestic violence or stalking or something like that in Wisconsin. I was shocked at that number. Do you often run into people, or how often do you hear from people who are just surprised or in some kind of disbelief that it happens that frequently?
Every single day, Ezra. I think the general public does not acknowledge or totally understand what domestic abuse is, right? It can be physical abuse, which I think is what everybody thinks abuse is, but they don't understand that it can be emotional abuse, psychological abuse, isolation, financial abuse, religious abuse. You know, there's all different forms of domestic violence or intimate partner violence. And so it makes it just harder for the general public because they don't have all that knowledge of what it is, that they don't understand that it is, that it occurs as often as it does, one in three persons. Yeah.
And something that you're highlighting in particular this month is the correlation between that and the LGBTQ community. Why is domestic violence such an important issue to focus on as part of Pride Month?
Well, LGBTQ individuals are four times more likely to experience violent crimes than non-LGBTQ people. And so therefore, you know, there's many reasons why LGBTQ persons don't come out and share that abuse has happened to them. They fear that by reporting their abuser, who also identifies as LGBTQ, will reflect negatively on their reputation in the LGBTQ plus community, right? Lack of understanding. Many agencies and individuals who are not educated about LGBTQ plus the vocabulary, the culture, the issues. It just puts that victim in a place where they have to educate those persons who should be advocating for them, which just adds to the difficulty of approaching anyone and saying, I'm being abused.
We often hear, and I think people often think about violence against LGBTQ plus individuals as being from outside of that community and being the result of bigotry in some kind of way. We saw a crew of people ostensibly, according to authorities, on the way to a pride rally to cause all kind of violence, arrested from the back of a U-Haul here in the last few days. And we think about that when we think about this violence. But how prevalent is domestic or intimate partner violence among that community?
Among the LGBTQ plus community?
Yeah.
Well, again, it happens they're four times more likely to experience the crime of abuse. And it's because their community is so small, mm-hmm. it's so hard for them to reach out again for assistance because they are fear of being ousted from their community. So, who would they turn to? You know, it's hard enough for a non-LGBTQ plus person to share about the abuse that has happened in their life. And they don't have the additional stigma against them.
Now, in New Horizons work, you're constantly working against domestic violence in all kinds of situations and providing assistance for people who have been through through those kinds of experience. What are some of the more visible things that you do that people might be aware of?
Well, we have outreach centers in both La Crosse and Trumbull counties. So we serve both counties and then the outlying counties. We have a domestic abuse reduction team, which is a program that has our advocates working alongside law enforcement for with victims who have been, who have experienced several times of abusive situations where law enforcement has been called. And then, of course, we have the shelter, to the emergency crisis shelter, where persons who are fleeing an abusive situation can come temporarily reside at while we're working through them to help them find permanent housing, do some financial advocacy. Oftentimes we see that persons who are experiencing domestic abuse are not allowed to work outside of their home, or if they are allowed to work outside of their home, they have to hand over their paycheck to their abuser. So they don't have income, or perhaps they don't haven't had the opportunity to do budgeting to save up for rent and car payment and all that type of thing. We help persons find housing. We provide them with legal advocacy so we can help persons understand what it is to go for a restraining order and or what that court session will be like. And we're not lawyers or attorneys, so we can't provide legal advice, but we can explain to them like the statutes and so forth, the state of Wisconsin and how those will affect. And if an attorney is actually needed, we can work to connect them with one. We work with persons finding employment, help them search the market, help them practice skills, help connect them to other service agencies that deal specifically with employment even. We do a lot of safety planning, right? We know that the most dangerous time for a person to leave an abusive situation is when they leave it, right? That's when we can see lethal things happen. It's the last attempt of power and control that the perpetrator has over them. And so we do a lot of safety planning to keep them safe. And if there's children, them safe also when they're doing that. Believe it or not, we do a lot of suicide prevention work, right? Persons who have experienced abuse will sometimes self-medicate, whether that be drugs or alcohol. Oftentimes they're experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder from the abuse that they've experienced, whether it's physical abuse or sexual abuse. And so sometimes there might be thoughts of harming themselves, and so we work with them with that. We do have a licensed therapist on staff who works with persons directly so that they don't have to search for therapy through one of our medical professions or one of our private therapy professions. So there's no billing of insurance, that type of thing, for the perpetrator to find out. We help people develop life skills. Oftentimes they might not have those completely just because of the abusive world that they've lived in at home. We help them connect for medical advocacy. We provide support groups. We provide youth and family advocacy because oftentimes there are children involved. And it's unfortunate, but I think as adults in an abusive situation, we may not believe that or may not think that our children are aware of the abuse happening in the family, because maybe we've done our best to keep it hidden from them. Maybe the fights occur after bedtime, or if there's a bruise on our body, we'll say, you know, we fell or whatever. But children know so much more than what we think they do. And so we work with the children to help them understand that abuse is not their fault and, you know, help explain that to them. A huge thing we work with is building up the survivor's self-esteem. When you live in an abusive situation, that perpetrator, your abuser, has done everything within their power to isolate you from other persons, and to knock down your self-esteem. So basically you become dependent upon them, right? Which makes it harder for you to leave. So we do a lot of that, and we do a lot of preventative work. We like to do educational pieces out in the public, which it's all free and complimentary. So, you know, we can talk about what domestic abuse is. We can talk about legal advocacy. We can talk about housing. We can help people understand what healthy relationships are, what bullying is in school, and so forth. So we just have a realm of pieces that we can provide to survivors and the community.
You talked about people being so connected to their abuser that that they really depend on them. They've been isolated from people, oftentimes and maybe don't even have control of what happens to their own income. So if this is happening to someone, and if they by some chance do happen to be listening to a conversation like this, what's the first thing that they need to do to be able to get out of that situation?
They need to connect with someone. And if they don't feel comfortable going to a friend or a family member or a coworker, we encourage them to give us a call on our crisis line, which locally, do you want me to give you the number?
Yes, give it twice.
Okay. Locally, our crisis line number is 608-791-2600. And we also have an 800 number for our crisis line, which is 888-231-0066. And I can say those again for you.
Yes, please.
Locally, our crisis line, 608-791-2600. And toll free, it is 888-231-0066. Also, I think I'd like, Ezra, it's important for persons to know, because when you are in an abusive situation, you feel guilty. You've been coerced, perhaps. I don't know if that's the correct word, but you feel like it's your fault, right? Like you should have been done something to be able to stop that. And that comes from the perpetrator and their power and control over you. And so it's really hard to reach out. So what I like to encourage people to say is, if you think that someone is not in a safe or healthy relationship, and it isn't necessarily just bruises on the face or bruises on the arm, oftentimes you won't see those things. It will be somebody saying, let's say maybe if you went out to coffee with them or out to lunch and their perpetrator is calling or texting them 10 times, 2 times, 3 times within that hour that you're spending there, that's all power and control right there. That's a sign, I think, that people don't think of happening, right? If the person, your friends, your family member, your coworker always says that they have to check with their partner first, that's a sign of power and control, right? So if you think that they may be in an unhealthy relationship, please say to them, doesn't feel to me like your relationship is real healthy. And sometimes I'm worried about your safety, or I'm worried about what's happening with you. I just want you to know that I'm always here. I won't judge you. I will listen, and I'll help you reach out to somebody that knows something about domestic abuse and then provide them with New Horizons information.
That's good advice, because I think people might wonder, especially if this doesn't come up very often, what they should do. And I know I read somewhere that it's obviously it's important to keep information that people give you about their life confidential, not only because that's just a good practice when you're talking about people's private information, but also in this case, because not doing so could be very dangerous for someone who's in an abusive relationship like that. But how far does that extend? Like, if somebody is in a legitimately dangerous situation, when do you know when it's time to call authorities or get someone mm-hmm. else involved or do something that could actually violate that confidence? Is there ever a time for that?
I think that has to be more of that person's individual choice, right? And that gut feeling. And I guess, and I can only speak personally, but if I had to weigh between losing a friend as a friendship or losing them because of a homicide, I would prefer to lose their friendship.
That's a
You
really,
know, but I,
that's
that's,
a,
yeah, that's me speaking. It might not be the same for everybody. I'm a firm believer that a person's gut reaction is true, like
okay.
95% of the time. Always go with your gut, you
Yeah.
know, always go with your gut.
You've given a lot of information about the services that New Horizons provides and some contact information there, but bringing it back to the thing that started the whole conversation, which is it's Pride Month, and you were talking about the relevance of these issues of domestic violence within the LGBTQ plus community, and in the information that your staff sent to us before this conversation, it indicated that a lot of people from that community don't always get the support that they need. Sometimes they're denied services for one reason or another. But that's not going to be the case if they get in touch with New Horizons here in La Crosse or in Whitehall, right?
That is correct. Our services are available to everyone, absolutely everyone, and they're all free and confidential. Our staff is experienced with inclusivity of the LGBTQ community. All of our buildings and our offices and our staff persons are safe to speak with and welcoming.
Well, I want to thank you for being here. Ann Kapoff is the executive director of New Horizons Shelter and Outreach Centers. And in addition to the numbers that you mentioned earlier in this conversation, what's the website where people can find more information about New Horizons?
Okay, it's www.nhagainstabuse.org.
NHagainstabuse.org.
Correct.
Ann Kapoff, thanks a lot for being here on Newsmakers today.
Thank you, Ezra.
You can email us anytime throughout the week at Newsmakers. Our email address is newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Coming up, our new Meet the Mayor series continues. This week, we are headed to Sparta. That's next on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin Bureau. We're continuing our Meet the Mayor series on Newsmakers today. Today it's a conversation with Sparta Mayor Kevin Riley. With a population of right around 10,000, give or take, Sparta is the county seat of Monroe County. And in case you didn't know, it's the bicycling capital of America. And we're going to talk about all of that. But first things first, Mayor Kevin Riley, welcome to Newsmakers.
Well, thank you very much, Ezra. I look forward to talking to you and to your listeners.
Well, I'm interested to hear about Sparta. It's a place I've been many times, but I know for some people they wave at it driving past on I-90, and that might be it. So, how do you describe Sparta to somebody who hasn't spent a lot of time there?
First of all, you kind of hit on one of the key points here. We did just cross over 10,000 on our population this past census. So we actually are 10,025 people. It's a nice little village. I use the term village, but we are actually a city in the state of Wisconsin. We are promoting industry. We have a new business park here in town, 180 acres that is shovel ready, ready for businesses to come in. We're already starting to fill that up. I think I was born and raised here, so I'm biased and no, I have no problems with that at all. I don't know if you touch my shirt here. We are the bicycling capital of America. We have the Sparta, the Elroy Sparta Bike Trail. I like to say the Sparta Elroy Trail, which is connected to the La Crosse Trail also. But we were the first rails to trails in America from, but in Wisconsin also. That's probably what we're best known for. But we have so many other things going on here. One of the things we're developing is our park system. We've got 260 acres of park land here. And we have a gentleman here, Reinhard Mueller, that has hand-built several bridges. Now, these aren't just bridges with logs going across. These are majestic pieces of structure. He's an engineer, and we've become quite well known. He has built 6 bridges. Some span the La Crosse River, some span a smaller Beaver Creek, and he's got a 7th going up. These are used for pedestrian traffic. They're used for the golf course is actually going to be our next one, and snowmobiles. They're quite beautiful structures.
So they're scenic, not just functional.
That is correct. They are beautiful pieces of construction. As I said, he's an architect. I think he's actually kind of a frustrated mason construction worker, and this is the way he gets to use those skills along with his architectural skills and engineering skills. If you travel through the Driftless area, you'll notice just the natural beauty of Sparta and the surrounding area. I just think we are a wonderful town. We have a lot going on here, and we would love for people to pull off the interstate. We have 2 exits off the interstate, exit 25 and 28, and come on down to Sparta and visit us.
So you talked about the business park that's in development right now. What are the industries that are important to your community?
Well, our number one employer is Fort McCoy. You know, Fort McCoy is just 8 miles down the road. It is by far the number one employer here and not just Sparta, but the whole region. I call them our big neighbors over to the down the road here. So that is our number one employer. But we have other businesses such as Northern Engraving, who's a pretty large employer, Multistack, Matthews Bows, internationally known for their compound bows, and also guitars. That's also one of the other things they do. They make high-end guitars.
Matthews makes bows and guitars?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, the technology for stringing bows carried over to stringing guitars.
Okay.
And it's kind of a natural fit if you think about it. So they are one of the manufacturers here in town. In our business park, we have AMS Medical. They make the little implants for your teeth. If you need a tooth implant, they're made of, and I'm not a scientist, but some very expensive metal. And there aren't many people that do this in the world, and they're one of the ones that are located here in Sparta. We have Martin Trucking has gone into our new business park. Brooks Tractors has moved up to the business park. We opened up the business park just a couple of years ago, and we're about a third full out of 180-acre business park. So it's going to fill way faster than we expected, but that's a great problem to have. So we're already starting to look for new land to create another business park. This one is located right off the interstate. In fact, it parallels the interstate for a good part of it. And it's right on exit 25.
You know, something that makes a community a wonderful place to live and a wonderful place to visit is recreational opportunities. What is it that either visitors or people who live in Sparta, what do they look forward to doing while they're there? And let's you talked about the bike trail, and I want to talk about that in addition to this conversation. But beside the biking, what are we doing when we come to Sparta?
I've got there's 10 jewels of Sparta, 10 pearls, and I will hopefully touch on all these. But one of them was our park system. That's our number one. We have a brand new aquatic center here in Sparta, probably the thing I am most proud of. I've been on city council for 13 years before I became mayor. I was the chairman of the Sparta Aquatic Center Committee that built the aquatic center. It's an Olympic-sized pool that we took and brought up from, I believe it was originally built post-World War II, 1943, 45, something like that. And we added things like a two-story tower, lily pads for the little kids, a zero entry for the tiny kids. We have an entry for anybody with disabilities in that. I don't know if you're familiar with our Bend Biking. That's one of our local symbols. It's an 1890s gentleman riding a penny farthing bicycle.
I've seen it.
Them in the pool with an umbrella, and it rains off his umbrella. It's just a beautiful, beautiful pool. Quite proud of that. We have an 18-hole golf course, which is fantastic. It's highly rated in a lot of the golf magazines. It's a par 72, I believe. It's been, I don't golf that much. I go for charity events, but it is just beautiful. We have 260 total acres of parkland, perched lake. I can go on and on. 10 outdoor shelters. We have a hockey rink in our parks. Just a wonderful park system, and something that we are quite proud of here.
We've heard a lot about some wonderful things to do and some great businesses that are located in your town. But every town has its challenges. Every city has its challenges. What are the biggest challenges that Sparta has faced in your time, either as mayor or in the previous decade or so as a council member?
I would say one of the things I'm one of the targets that I'm trying to work with is just upgrading some of our home stock here in town. Sparta is an older community. It's 170 years old. A lot of our houses are older. And just trying to aesthetically bring them up and have people put some effort and money into our houses, not so much the homeowners, but our contractors, and improve our house stock. Well, we have improved our apartment dwellings. We've got a new complex on Main Street. I don't know, that must be 80, 90 units. We are just this month opening up the old high school, which was built in 1923 or 24, was reconditioned and is going to be, I think it's 25 to 30 condominium units. We're really excited about that. I have snuck a few peeks. They have the ribbon cutting on the 21st, I think it is. But that's probably our biggest challenge, is just upgrading. It's a 170-year-old community, like most of the communities in this region.
Now, you have alluded to the biking and talked about the being the first Rails to Trails program in the country, let alone the state. Was that sort of the big impetus of how biking became such a big deal, bicycling became such a big deal in Sparta?
Yeah, that was certainly the big impetus. One thing of note, my father was the mayor of Sparta about 30 years ago, and he always takes claim to bringing that moniker along. I don't know whether it was true or not, but it's his story, and I'll let him stick to it.
There you go.
No longer with us, and he can't be denied. But that was certainly the impetus of the bicycling capital of America. We have made Sparta a biking-friendly community. The bike trail goes right alongside the town, and we have created infrastructure to extend the trail into the town. You can now get off the bike trail and come right into the heart of the community through some of those bridges that I had mentioned earlier. You go over those bridges and you end up right in the heart of our downtown. We have developed a new community square downtown called Mueller Square. As I said, the gentleman's name that has built these bridges and that is Reinhard Mueller. Well, he's also built these little huts, winter huts, and we have a thing called Chris Kindlemark in the winter for Christmas, and it's all centered. It's a little village within the city. It's just this beautiful Hallmark-like vintage. In fact, Hallmark, if you're listening, you're missing something here.
Make 700 Christmas movies a year. Why not set one of them in Sparta, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
On the bike trail, is that part of the state trail system? In other words, do people need to make sure they purchase a pass or whatever to be legal on the bike trail before they head out?
Yes, a very good point. Right at the bike trail in Sparta, we have the Chamber of Commerce office is right on the bike trail, and you can purchase the pass there, a daily pass or a season pass. I'm not sure the rates. I believe the daily pass is like $5. Season pass, I'm going to guess, like $25. If you've never been on the bike trail, it's just majestic. You go through three of the old type tunnels that the trains used to go through. The first tunnel is just outside of Sparta. It's just short of a mile long. You have to get off your bike and use a flashlight because there is no light in the tunnel. It's that long. I have some personal connection to that tunnel. My grandpa used to be a tunnel tender back when the trains went through, and he would they have big doors that they would close when the tunnel trains left and then open as the trains came. And he was one of the tunnel tenders. So I'm have a very high affinity towards the bike trail and the tunnels themselves.
Well, it all sounds very interesting. Not only the bike trail, but the wonderful community that you've got there. As I said, I've been there many times, and I hope our conversation will encourage some other people to stop by and not just wave on the way past on I-90. Mayor Kevin Riley is the mayor of Sparta. I want to thank you for being on Newsmakers today, Mayor.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure. And please, if you're driving by Sparta, don't just wave. Turn in, come on in, and go Sparta.
Absolutely. And remember, you can hear this conversation again, or if you missed our earlier conversations, you can stream them or any of our previous episodes on demand. Just go to newsmakers.org, or go to wpr.org/newsmakers. That's wpr.org/newsmakers, or find Newsmakers on your favorite podcasting app. Oh, and what question do you want us to ask your mayor? You can send those to me at newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Coming up, we'll find all about the La Crosse Juneteenth celebration and how you can find us there as well, WPR. We're back in just a minute. That's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studio. It was 157 years ago this weekend that Union troops rode into Galveston, Texas, and read a proclamation that the Civil War was over and that enslaved people were free. Since that day, June 19th has been celebrated as Juneteenth, first among Black Americans, and then as years go on, more and more people have joined the celebration. The La Crosse Juneteenth celebration will be this Saturday in Riverside Park, and we are going to talk about it now on Newsmakers. Joining me are two people very instrumental in organizing this weekend's festivities. First of all, Shondell Spivey is back. He's the executive director of BLACK, which is Black Leaders Acquiring Collective Knowledge. Shondell, welcome back to Newsmakers.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is Mia Davis, who has also been on the program before. She is the vice president of an organization called Black Student Leaders. Mia, welcome back to Newsmakers.
Thanks for having me today.
Certainly. So I want to ask each of you, as Juneteenth is growing in the national prominence, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later, what was Juneteenth to you in your family growing up? How did you celebrate? What did that holiday mean for you? Let's start with you, Shondell.
Yeah, so to be honest with you, so I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They do a large Juneteenth celebration quite often. And growing up, it was just another kind of like hangout festival that you went to, and whatnot, and didn't necessarily know the full meaning of it. But, obviously as I got older and just started to educate myself, right, on the event and more about it, it became more of a meaning of, you know, again, celebrating Black liberation, Black freedom, but also a reminder, right, that when we really think about Juneteenth, it's really important to recognize also that technically speaking, Black folks' freedom was when the Emancipation Proclamation was signed, which would have been January 1st of 1863. And so when we celebrate Juneteenth as that last day of slavery, because that was when the last day slaves were told they were free, right? I think it's also important to recognize that January 1st has a strong significance in the Black community as well.
So when you talked about earlier it being more of a community festival kind of hangout thing, and then later you started to learn more of the depth of what the holiday means, when was that? How old were you at that point?
To be honest with you, probably high school.
Okay.
High school. So later in high school, I think, I can't even tell you when. But sometime in high school.
So, Mia, what about you? You're in high school right now, and here you are, one of the organizers of the city's Juneteenth celebration, or the big Juneteenth celebration that's put on by a number of organizations within the city. Tell me about your awareness of Juneteenth as a holiday through your life.
So the earliest memory of like Juneteenth for me would be because I grew up in Madison, Wisconsin. I moved to La Crosse about 4 or 5 years ago. There was always a big celebration in the park, and my family owned it, a business, and we had like a food truck, a food stand, so we would always come out to that. And I remember always just working that, and I always just seen like Black businesses, Black business owners, just Black kids in the park. Just, and there was not just only Black people, there were like all different types of colors around, and we all just came out and celebrated. We supported each other's businesses. It was just always super fun. I remember like snow cones. Like, I don't know why this comes to mind, but snow cones. There were snow cones. I remember just selling them to kids because my uncle had his snow cone machine. So it was just so cool. And that's why like Juneteenth is so important to me now, and the fun fair and the fun part of it, because it's good to know the education. But I remember as a kid just like having so much fun, and it was just a park. It was just a park. There was just vendors. It was just like people out there. And I just remember the community. And I always just like had fun every year. And I always look forward to that every year. So then moving to La Crosse and having Black student leaders, then last year it marked a national holiday. It was just like, we have to do something that's fun, educational, and it brings our community together. So that's when like we all came together. We partnered with Black and different organizations, and we made this Juneteenth. And like we have Black student leaders has our fun fair part of it. So I feel like I kind of took a little bit of like the things I enjoyed back in Madison. And I just like, okay, let's bring that here. Let's bring that community here. Let's bring all different races together. Let's bring the whole community together. And let's celebrate this holiday, and let's uplift our Black and brown people. And I feel as though like it's very, very powerful. Like, last year at Juneteenth, I seen so many people. Everybody was like, I seen you there. And I was like, I loved it. Like, I just love the community building, bringing people together, people enjoying the day. Like, people are not just sitting at home, just doing nothing. People came outside. It was people coming from all hours of the day, just enjoying themselves, educating themselves, engaging with people, going to booths, just like learning and educating themselves, and then like supporting and uplifting the Black community, which I feel is so, so powerful. And I just like, I don't know, it just like it has a special place in my heart for some reason, because I just love community and bringing people together. And I just like, I seen people eating, people smiling. Yeah, the hypnotist, it was just very engaging. And like last year made it so like this year, like this is something very, very important to me. This is something I've been waiting for all year. This is something like I've been dreaming of, like how Juneteenth will be set up all week. Cause like, I just really love that this is in place. And I love that our community is celebrating it. And people were like, I didn't know about Juneteenth. Now everybody knows. Everybody is communicating about this. Everybody has been speaking on this all year. Everybody's looking forward to it. So I love that we had made this like something that's big, and like it's not just Juneteenth, Black people celebrating. It's Juneteenth, our community celebrating together and uplifting our community. So I just love that Juneteenth is that for our community and for the Black community. And as a young person, it's amazing. It's amazing seeing the older generation. Then we're all supporting each other. We're uplifting each other. We're all building each other together. So it's very, very nice. And I love it so much.
Well, this is certainly a holiday that's growing in prominence in this area, but also nationally. Shawndell, last year in 2021, for the first time, Juneteenth was recognized as a federal holiday. Like, it's an official holiday like all the rest of them. In fact, this year it's the 19th falls on a Sunday, and so federal employees and bank employees and many others will get that Monday off of work. Like, it's a legit federal holiday. What does that do to add to the national attention or awareness or what have you about Juneteenth?
Yeah, so first off, I was really excited that it was declared a national holiday. Also, it was one of those moments of like, it's about time, right? Like, it should have been done, but now that you did it, awesome, amazing. Thank you for doing it. But I think you know, it being declared a national holiday also forces America, right, to acknowledge what it has done, right? Because again, like I said earlier, when you think about the emancipation of slavery, that was really January 1st of 1863. But Juneteenth, or the day that the slaves in Texas heard that they were free, was, I believe, 2 or 3 years after.
Yeah, it was. Right? It was the. I have the date written down. It was June 19th of 1865.
So 2 years after they were already declared free, where they had to go and take the soldiers into Texas to say, you are free again, right? And so we celebrate that as like recognizing that that last day of being told those slaves were free really declared that liberation for Black families. Now, don't get it twisted, right? Obviously, there's still a lot that we have to do in this country outside of declaring Juneteenth as a national holiday, because we can declare it a national holiday, but if we don't support and build up the Black community, then declaring it as a national holiday ultimately does nothing. But it's really important to acknowledge the history of America. And I think by declaring it a national holiday forces us to really rethink this day, right? Like, we didn't think about Juneteenth, you know, as prominently. When Mia was talking, she was talking about the folks that were like, hey, I didn't really know anything about Juneteenth. And it's one of those things where, like, as Black folks, we're like, you should know about it. everybody should know about this day because it's a very significant day in our history.
Mia, let's talk about the La Crosse Juneteenth. It's coming up on Saturday. It's going to be pretty much most of the day in the park. I think things start at 11 or noon or so. But tell me what's going on there. And in particular, I know because WPR is one of the vendors, you're asking all your vendors to have like a Juneteenth-themed thing that they're able to do. What kind of cool things have you heard about that people are going to be bringing to the park?
I've been doing more of the youth part of the June, so I don't really know too much of like what people are bringing, but I'm very, very excited to see the creativity that people use this year in like engaging Juneteenth into their booth and like what their organization or what they do in the community. I'm very excited to see what they're doing. I personally don't know exactly like what some of the new things and different things that people are going to be doing. But I know that Black Student Leaders is putting on the youth side again this year, and we're very excited. And we have a lady who actually donated some of their like fun fair games and different things like that from their school fun fair. So she'll be bringing that to the park this year, and we're very excited for that. Then we have a whole bunch of games, and we have our candy store that's going to be out this year. We have our cotton candy, we have our snow cone, which is free. We have all of our games, which are going to be free. So this week we've been just running around everywhere, making sure everything is perfect for everybody. And we are going to have all the free tickets and different things like that for youth. There's going to be free food provided for families. So we're very excited to see like everything that we've been working very hard on come to the light. And I'm very excited to see that.
So Juneteenth has been going on for a long, long time nationally, but here in La Crosse, it's been a development in more recent years. How did it get started, Sean Dell, and how did you get involved?
Several years ago, there was an organization called Amen who kind of started having some of the Juneteenth celebrations. And then during kind of one of the years of COVID, Black did a social distance Juneteenth. And then the following year, so last year, we partnered with Hope Restores, and Hope Restores and Black then led the Juneteenth celebration last year. And this year, Hope Restores, Black, and Enduring Families Project, Black Student Leaders, and the La Crosse Community Juneteenth Committee, it will be hosting this year's Juneteenth celebration.
And as part of that, there are events going on all day long, starting at noon all the way, until 8 o'clock in the evening. What are some of the key highlights of the day?
Yes. So we have essentially three areas that we're highlighting. One is the main stage, And on the main stage, we'll have some speakers. We'll have some performers like Jabali Africa is coming into town, and they do a lot of music and drumming and things like that. And then we have Chris Jones, who's a hypnotist who was here last year, and he's going to return this year as well. And also on the main stage, one of the things that we're really excited about is this year we're hosting a Juneteenth court. And so Juneteenth court essentially is kind of like the Mr. and Mrs. Juneteenth, cotillion, botillion, all wrapped in one. And so we'll actually be presenting those young folks that were selected for the Juneteenth court at the Juneteenth event on the main stage. And then in the center of the state or the center of the park, we'll have our booths and vendors. And then on the far side of the park, we will have our youth fun fair that has been led and put on by Black student leaders.
Well, I'm going to put both of you on the spot because one of the things that WPR is doing at our booth, we tried to connect what we do, which is to, you know, make audio products and different things, and we're trying to connect that with Juneteenth and what Juneteenth means and what it underlies. So one of the questions that we're going to be asking people who stop by our booth, if they're willing to talk to us and be recorded, we're going to ask them what freedom means for them and how they can use their freedom to give back to their community. So let me put you guys on the spot. Mia, we can start with you. What does freedom mean to you, and how do you use that to give back in your community?
Okay, I look at myself as I look at myself as privileged than other Black people sometimes, because I feel like I grew up with both parents in the house. Like I had reasons like why I feel I'm a little more privileged. So I do a lot of cooking in the community, and I do a lot of working with different people in the community. And like, I use my voice, I use my outspokenness, I use my cooking I kind of like break out of like what people think, break out of like that. Like in my cooking, I use like, there's recipes. I look at recipes and I go like, okay, I use this ingredient. Well, I like to use this, so I'm gonna add this, and that. Because like, I feel like I have like the freedom to do like whatever I want. And I know like with Black student leaders, our group is all about like action. If we say we're gonna do something, we're gonna do it. We're gonna take the steps. Even if it doesn't work out the first time, we're gonna keep on moving and keep on doing it, because everything's all about action. So I feel as though I use like my freedom and my outspokenness to make change a little bit.
I like it, and I like what you were saying about stepping outside of traditional boundaries, of even with the food you were talking about making. This particular kind of food is supposed to go with this and this and this, and you're talking about using that to bring all kinds of traditions together, and using with food. I mean, we talk about bringing people to the table all the time, but with food, you're literally bringing people to the same table over something that hopefully they can enjoy. So that's great. Thank you. Shondell, what about you? What does freedom mean to you, and how can you turn that around and use it in your community?
Yeah, see, I might have to wait till Juneteenth to answer that question.
Think about it a little bit, huh?
No. No, I would say to me, when I hear freedom, I think of liberation, and I think of being able to authentically be myself and who I am, right? I think oftentimes we see Black people as a monolith, and that's not the case. We each have our own uniqueness. We have our own perspectives and views and all those different things. And so for me, when I think of freedom, I think of, like I said, being authentically myself, being able to freely be me. Also, as I think about the word freedom, and then when you talk about how do you give it back to your community, I think you use what you know and gain and understand, and you work to educate and you work to empower, right? So when I think about the work that I do as a community leader, I work to make sure that I'm empowering young people. I make sure that I work to empower our community to come together, right? And specifically like the Black community, and figure out ways in which that I can support our community to grow and develop and be, and feel like they can also unapologetically and authentically be themselves.
Well, we've been talking about Juneteenth today, the holiday in general, but more specifically the La Crosse Juneteenth celebration, which is coming up on Saturday at Riverside Park. And it's a long series of events. There will be events going on the stage most of the day, music well into the night. But there will also be all kinds of fun things going on throughout the park to walk around and experience, starting at noon, going all the way till 8 p.m. I want to thank my guests today, Shaundell Spivey from Black, that's Black Leaders Acquiring Collective Knowledge, and Mia Davis with Black Student Leaders. Shaundell, Mia, thank you very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you so much for having us. I really appreciate
it. Thank you very much for coming. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's how you can listen to our program every week. We're on Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. Friday night at 7, we're on NPR News and Music 88.9. And we're always online at WPR.org/newsmakers. For our producer, Dawn Jewell, I'm Ezra Wall. Join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.